Everybody, and welcome back to the press. This is our second show of Masters Week. I'm Ryan Ballingy. It's great to have you here with us. We're going to go in a little bit more depth of what we talked about in the first show. We're going to talk about model results. We're going to talk about variance. We're going to talk about strokes gain trends, short term, long term, first round leader plays, all kinds of fun stuff to really get in the weeds here. And then our final show of the week, which will be for Wednesday, we'll talk about derivative plays, top fives, tens, 20s, 40s, made miss cut, prop bets, different nationality bets, all kinds of fun stuff. We'll get into all the kind of wacky stuff, some heads-up matchups as well, which we don't typically do on this show, but we will talk about for this week. It's a special week, and we embrace those matchups on Masters Weeks because, honestly, this is not a week where you should be thinking about trying to make tons and tons of money on the outright market. Again, we talked about yesterday. These are mature markets where you're going to get a lot of money, a lot of built-up position that's going to be hard to kind of move markets in the way that you want it, and it's going to be kind of hard to get great values unless you kind of look at the Corey Connors and Sepp Strakas of the world, and those guys have already been bet up because people talk about it because more people are talking about betting on golf this week than any other week of the year. So matchups gives an opportunity to potentially get some plus money out there or some smart money wagers that give us a good chance to kind of recoup some of the bets that maybe we make over the course of the week, especially if you're like me and you like to find some deeper shots that maybe can help you win and not play the favorites as much. These weeks where Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy are just, they're not the right price. They're not the right price for what we've got here. So that all said, let's get back into it. We're talking about the Masters Tournament at Augusta National Golf Club in Augusta, Georgia. It is an Alistair McKenzie masterpiece. Bobby Jones had an input on it at the time in 1930s when it was built, opened in 1933 in January of that year. Robert Trent Jones Jr. had a lot, or Sr. had a lot of hand in this at one point. Had Tom Fazio, who's had his fingerprints all over this in more recent memory. So a bunch of different architects have had their paws in this, but Alistair McKenzie is the one that gets the credit. 7,555 yards this year is the scorecard length from the Masters tees. Presumed $20 million purse could be higher than we'll announce that on the Saturday, and then 100 official World Golf Rank points to the winner, which comes with all the majors. That's the case this week as well. To rehash our model top 10 for the week, we do this for our members at golfnewsnet.com, the entire field. 196, we did it before Vijay withdrew. Newsflash was, I think, next to last in the ranking. So it didn't really change much. But we do our top 10 for free because most weeks there's nothing really controversial about this. Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Colin Morikawa, three best ball strikers, three best players on the PGA Tour this year. Bryson DeChambeau, Xander Schauffele, who's starting to get it together, Brooks Koepka, Hideki Matsuyama, Tommy Fleetwood, Shane Lowry, and Patrick Cantlay. Again, I don't think any of those are shockers. Cantlay maybe because he's a great PGA Tour player, hasn't played particularly well the last 18, 20 months or so, but still gains strokes like crazy, even when he's not playing his best. So that's why he shows up here. And actually shows up pretty well in a lot of the majors, even though, again, never, other than that one year at the Masters, really hasn't been a threat to win. And that was the year Tiger won. So that didn't happen. Horses for courses. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. There are a lot of them. And we're not going to go through the whole list here. I think you can just kind of appreciate that guys who have played well in the Masters are horses for courses. And they're horses for courses for a couple of reasons. One, they're the best players in the world. But two, and I think this is very important, is that you get the same guys who come back to the Masters over and over and over again because of the qualifying criteria. You stay in the top 50 in the world for a long time, which is not easy to do. But if you do it, then you get invites back. You get keeping to come back. If you win, you come back for life. And eventually that builds up and you replace champions who leave. Fortunately, Bernhard Langer is playing his 41st and last Masters this year. So he's going to be eventually replaced by, if we have a new champion, that person will get to come for the next 40 years. And that's just kind of the way that it works. It's kind of a birth and rebirth and changing out of the cycle of the Masters. But those players, there's always that bank of past champions, right, who could be part of this and will be part of it for life. You've got amateurs who are part of it, five this year. You've got a little bit bigger field than usual because we had some diversity in the number of winners that we had. So all of that to say, you've got horses for courses. These are guys who've been here a while and have figured out they kind of like the place. So Scheffler, McIlroy, Koepka, who's done everything but win here. Schauffele has played very well here. Had an interesting news conference on Monday kind of talking about getting back to a good place, but also taking a lot of confidence from his two major wins last year that he's proven to himself that he can do it, he can handle it, and that he's not going to get so mired in practicing at the beautiful tournament practice facility as he's done in the past, that he knows where to split his time. He's gotten better at that. Morikawa's played great here. Rahm's won here. Reed's won here. Cam Smith has almost won here a couple of different times. Cam Young's played well here. and just seems like it because that's where he gains his strokes off the tee and with wedges. Zalatoris has done well here. Max Holm has done well here. Jordan Spieth's done well here. You would kind of not favor those guys so much. Corey Connors has done very well here. He's a flusher. What do you expect? So this is a second shot golf course. He's a second shot king. It's not brain science. You know, we're talking about here. Some interesting course fits. We don't have, you know, as much full-fledged strokes gained data from the Masters tournament as you do the shot link era from back to 2003. It's a relatively new thing in the grand scheme for the Masters tournament. But generally speaking, you put a lot less emphasis on putting here, closer to 18%, 17%, compared to your tee to green, which is 81, 82%. And of that 82%, you've got a big emphasis, about half of that, in the approach play. So you want guys who hit it pretty far off the tee. You want guys who set up easy approaches. You would be surprised who those people are, right? Flushers like Corey Connors, Xander Schauffele, Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Colin Morikawa as well, but just want to throw some names out there. Again, there's a reason, right? Horses for courses. We play this thing a lot. It kind of imminently tells you who's going to do pretty well. Past champions, just to rehash this list, Scheffler, Rahm, Scheffler, Matsuyama, Dustin Johnson in November, and I will be forced to say that for the rest of my life. Thanks, COVID. November 1 was different. It was soft. It was Bermuda. It was 20 under. Just didn't feel quite right, but he's still a Masters champion. I will never take that away from him. But it was a different tournament. Tiger Woods, Patrick Reed, going back to 2018. Now, here's my favorite slide of this second show that we always do, that we've started doing since we've kind of got this episode each week into more depth about short-term form, looking beyond model, looking beyond feel, just looking at guys who are playing well. And we look at this graphic from three categories. We're looking at players who are gaining 1.2 strokes per round on the average, strokes gained total in the last 10 events played. We're looking at players who have gained 1.5 or more strokes on the average, quality strokes per round, over those last 10 events. So that's taking your strokes gained total, multiplying it by the quality of your competition as measured by the official World Golf Ranking, and then separate to itself, players who are gaining 0.6 strokes per round on the approach in the last 10 tournaments played. And you'll see a lot of similarity between lists. You'll also see this is the longest list we've ever produced since we've started doing these segments. And the reason is you've got the best players in the world. Of course, they're playing great. So I'm not going to necessarily have to dive through everything here. You're going to see a lot of similarities between the first two lists. Really, everything is the same on them, except that Robert McIntyre somehow gets on quality strokes gained because he's playing against great competitions, just on the outside of that 1.2 number in the aggregate, but because of the quality of competition, gets in that 1.5 number. Usually works the opposite way. You qualify in the strokes gained number and you fall out of quality strokes gained because you're playing poor competition. That is not happening here for Robert McIntyre. But McIlroy, Daniel Berger, Scottie Scheffler, J.J. Spaun, in order, Justin Thomas, Michael Kim, Ludwig, Akshay, Joe Highsmith, Tommy Fleetwood, Shane Lowry, Patrick Cantlay, Colin Morikawa, Russell Henley, Sepp Straka, Bob McIntyre. Are you surprised? No, I don't think you should be. Then, strokes gained on the approach. Now, this is a little bit more interesting because, again, we just talked about this being a second shot golf course, about the approach being so important. Some guys are not on the other two lists that are on this one, right? You see a lot of similar names, of course, but you see some that are not. Xander Schauffele wasn't on those first two lists. Morikawa, McIlroy, Cantlay were. Hovland, not so much, but he's on this list, and he won. Lowry, Fleetwood, they're on both. Hoagie, Tom Hoagie's been playing great, especially the last month. Tom Kim is on this list. Buyer beware. Aaron Rye is on this list playing great golf. Maybe not the best all around because he doesn't gain a ton of strokes off the tee, but playing well. Will Zalatoris is on this list. Justin Thomas is on this list. Justin Thomas just shy of the other two lists, but some guys on that list I think are interesting that, again, they're good ball strikers. You're taking a little risk on them, then maybe they're not quite as consistent, but that's a little illuminating, I think. Then let's take a look at strokes gained tee to green leaders with low variance numbers. This is a statistic that I love. It's something I love to look at. It's a table that we have for our members at golfnewsnet.com in full. And I like to look at your strokes gained tee to green. I like to throw out putting because putting is the most variable of the components, right? I think you'd also add the strokes gained around the green, but that doesn't come up as often. It's not heavy influence. So I combine that. Some people would say strokes gained ball striking, which would be off the tee and on the approach. I'm cool with that version too. I just included the around the green portion. I like it a little bit better. So we're looking for guys who have low variance, though. We're not looking for guys who go up and down, up and down, up and down. We want guys who are kind of steady as a rock, right? That we want guys who maybe offer some value, even though they're not necessarily the sexiest. But we're also looking for guys who are playing well, just they're pretty steady. Fleetwood, Bobby Mack, Shane Lowry, Michael Kim's played great this year. Hideki, although I would argue that he's kind of skewed a little bit, but it still comes out that way in the calculation. Taylor Pendrith, what we've talked about, as a very interesting long shot, and Justin Thomas as well. So Justin Thomas keeps coming up on this thing. I'm not telling you to bet him, but he is kind of an attractive price, and he almost qualifies for a whole lot of metrics. I wouldn't be shocked if he plays well this week. And then we'll talk about this graphic again in our Wednesday show, but this is one I also really enjoy talking about. This is a loaded graphic too this week. Players who have finished in the top 20 of the last 50 starts, 50 events on the PGA Tour, the ones that they've played 40% of the time or more, right? So these are guys that are interesting. Top 20 bets this week. They're consistently in the top 20. And we have 16 guys. Now, most of them are who you expect. Scheffler, McIlroy, Schauffele, Morikawa, Ludwig, Shane Lowry, Tony Finau, Tommy Fleetwood, Sepp Straka. Those are basically people who are in the high 50s and above. Then you get into around the 50 percentage mark. Sungjae Im, Aaron Rye, Corey Connors, Russell Henley, Patrick Cantlay, Wyndham Clark, just below 50, Hideki Matsuyama, Robert McIntyre, Akshay Bhatia, they're all right around 50. A couple guys that didn't make this list, there were just too many. But when you're starting to think about trying to make top 20 plays, some of these guys are a little bit longer than others, you might be able to still get plus money on them. Take those chances. I'd rather take those chances with those guys if you're going to make those 20s than someone trying to parlay Scheffler, McIlroy, and Morikawa to finish in the top 20 to eke out a positive number. I'd rather take your shot on one guy knowing they have a consistent record across the PGA Tour schedule. Then I want to talk about first-round leaders, first-round strokes gained leaders. Again, we got the draw out. You can take a look at the tee times over at golfnewsnet.com, see the full tee sheet, or just go to masters.com, wherever you get it. I don't know that there's necessarily an early-late preference or a late-early preference. There's potentially some weather on the way on Friday. The chance of that's medium. There's a decent chance that it's kind of a wash. If it does rain, that obviously lengthens the course a little bit, but also softens it. So if you were to try to make some kind of wave determination now, I think you'd give a very slight edge to early-late. But that's it. The only problem is if it rains heavy enough and there's a delay of play, then early-late becomes the bad one because early-late probably means you go to Saturday morning to make the cut. I don't want that. More tired, more difficult, right? Not that it can't be done, but that's something to think about. Right now, I think it's kind of a slight edge to early-late. That all said, this is agnostic of that. Strokes gained leaders in the Masters in recent memory, last five-ish years or so. Scottie Scheffler, Will Zalatoris, Cam Smith, Victor Hovland, believe it or not, and Christian Bezuidenhout, who's an interesting play. I talked about him as a potential first-round leader play. I've seen people get into first-round leader and first-round leader top five plays this year. I think that's a brilliant way to play this. Bezuidenhout could be interesting. Victor Hovland could be interesting. Victor Hovland had an 8 Mile reference in his news conference today, and he wore a killer sweater from Jay Lindeberg, who I have raked over the coals for how they've dressed him. I am willing to be interested in Victor Hovland this week for non-golf reasons. And maybe my play is a first-round leader. Overall speaking, though, some other names to consider in the last 50 PGA Tour events played in strokes gained in the first round. Corey Connors, Ludwig Aubert, Tony Finau, Akshay Bhatia. They were all pretty much on the list last week for the Texas Open. Now, let's get into some betting odds just to kind of rehash the market. This is, again, from yesterday. So some things have obviously changed. But I think all of that information, you start to see a lot of patterns of names. So even if we got outside of what we talked about yesterday, where you want to be in the top 13 in a major in the last four played, 10 of the last 10 champions have done that. 13 of the last 13 have gained a total of 18 strokes tee to green in the 10 events before, or the four, excuse me, the four events before the Masters. If you look at the strokes gained at the aggregate average for the calendar year to date, if you're above that 1.5 strokes gained in the aggregate mark, there are eight guys that gets you to a really good metric too. That's 18 of the last 20, right? So a lot of the names keep coming up. Xander Schauffele is going to be on a couple of those lists. And I've seen more people come around to his position. Justin Thomas, just on the outside of those lists, a lot of them, 22-1. Interesting play. I don't think he's getting enough love or really attention this week. And I think that's because people are just putting him in the back pocket till Quail Hollow for the PGA Championship. I think that's a mistake. I think you might be able to get something out of him this week. You go after a Neiman. We don't get tons of data from Liv. We do get strokes gain data, and I'm not knocking it. Just we don't have a lot of it. They played on easy courses so far this year. Not that the PGA Tour doesn't, but course is not quite set up with the same level of difficulty. You have one event like that, which is Doral. Doral was tough, right? That's your test. You go with Neiman there based on that. You go with DeChambeau based on putting himself in the contention of the LIV guys. What about Koepka, who we know has the most LIV wins, but also cares the least about non-major events, probably if anybody in the modern era, right? I don't know. Do you want to consider that? I mean, he's done okay. I'm not worried about anything going on in his like personal life or the LIV contract or anything. You can compartmentalize all of that. That's easy enough. But that's something to consider. I still love Lowry. I still have not bet him yet. That's probably a mistake on my part. My positions right now are in Connors and Straka. I have Straka at 80 and 65. Personally, I've got Connors at 60. Got him a little worse than this. But that's fine. I'm happy with those numbers. I may bet Hovland is a first-round leader play and Bezuidenhoy is a first-round leader play. And then you start getting to some deeper shots. Again, a lot of these guys didn't appear on a lot of these lists. J.J. Spaun did. It's kind of hard to bet a guy 200-1 that's not a longer hitter, given the track record of the Masters champions. But he does hit it long enough and got into a Masters or a Players playoff. I mean, that means something. Patrick Reed still kind of stands out. You know, one guy I was looking at in my comparisons of how they played in the last 50 events versus the last 10 in terms of strokes gained total. One of the guys that's shown the most improvement recently is Justin Rose. Now, it's not to world beater level, but it's from not good at all to pretty decent. Kind of worth an interesting thought at 110-1. He had the heartbreaker in 2017 against Sergio. Probably should have won that one. He can do it. He's been playing better recently. So that's something to consider. Sergio at 90-1 is interesting. Won twice on LIV, played well last week, fell apart at the end, but has been playing pretty well overall. So I think he's an interesting play this week. Beyond that, I think you have to start thinking about maybe like a Keegan Bradley, who has at times shown the ability to play this course very well. What about a Matt McNeely, who played very well in Texas, but doesn't have a ton of experience here? It's kind of hard to get behind guys who don't have a lot of Augusta National experience. Aaron Rye's 175-1. He's shown up on a number of these lists. He's played well this year. He's demonstrated that last year isn't just a fluke unto itself, that this is a continuation of a run. There are going to be some people who bet Tom Kim because of good numbers. I'm not going to be one of those people. And I probably won't bet Aaron Rye. I think you have to kind of pick anywhere between 2 and 4 guys that are a little bit longer shots. And this is probably about your maximum range in which you can find them. And then you kind of have to walk away, because once you turn the page and you get into the 300s and 400s, you start thinking about guys like Tom Hoagie, who are interesting. Lucas Glover is kind of interesting. He's appeared on a number of lists. Cam Young at 225-1. Good course history. Not much else working for him. But could you be due for a unlikely but qualified champion? And Glover and Hoagie are guys like that. What about like a one of the Højgaards? You want to take Rasmus or Nikolai? Take your pick. But they've been playing pretty well, somewhat under the radar. I don't think worthy of a major championship to win bet, but that's up to you. But I think once you kind of get into some of these deeper numbers, you're starting to play with fire. Let's put it that way. So I think you have to find a way to kind of be willing to take a couple of guys that are 25-1 or shorter, whether that's you go with the favorites and you bite the bullet and you try to go with horrible prices on Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy. You go with a slightly better price on Colin Morikawa, who's in between the two in terms of strokes gained this year. Or do you go after someone like a Justin Thomas, who's kind of close to all of the metrics that we talk about and has multiple majors in his pocket and has shown some good capability to play this golf course? You go after a guy like that. That's up to you. It's up to your risk appetite. But just wanted to throw all these numbers at you. I think I will add a first-round leader play on Bezuidenhoy and Hovland. We'll see what happens there. I think it's at least worth having. And then I do feel increasingly better about my positions, and part of that is bias because I see more people saying, oh, yeah, it's a good call. I'm betting that guy. And don't fall into that trap. Take your convictions and run with them. Don't necessarily go off of somebody else unless you're coming into this having known nothing about this tournament, done no research, and you're just trying to take somebody at their word. Then I appreciate you listening and watching, and hopefully I help you make money, and hopefully other people you listen to help you make money. And I would encourage you, for as much as I love having people watch and listen to the show, to listen to other people too. There are lots of interesting voices, lots of well-informed voices in the golf betting space that have maybe different opinions than I do, and they can help you just the same this week and every week. We're an interesting community. Different voices make us stronger. So check out a couple of other shows as well if you get the chance this week. That's going to do it for us on this edition of the show. One more show before we get into the Masters. It'll be on Wednesday, Part 3 contest day. Talk about derivatives. We'll talk about first round leader a little bit more, 5s, 10s, 20s, some matchups, nationality plays, some fun stuff, other props as well. Watch the show on Golf News Net TV, available on the GNN apps for Roku and Amazon Fire, as well as streaming on GNN TV, which is on Zine, Free Life Sports, and Freecast. You can also watch us on our YouTube channel. Subscribe there, or you can subscribe to the audio only GNN Radio, which will play all of our podcasts just in audio form. Sign up for Golf News Net for $40 for 1 year, $70 for 2 years, or $100 for 3 years at golfnewsnet.com. Thanks so much for watching or listening. We will see you on our next show on Wednesday.